2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Utah Weekly Forum. I'm your host, Rebecca Cressman. Today, we're joined by two wonderful individuals with the Utah Division of Indian Affairs. Dustin Jansen is the director. Dustin, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
And James Toledo. Now, James, what is your official position within the Utah Division of Indian Affairs?
I'm the program manager for the office.
Okay. And we're going to be talking about some of the community events as well that are occurring in our state. But first, let's have that broader conversation. Talk to us a little bit about the purpose and the goals of the Utah Division of Indian Affairs here.
Well, the Utah Division of Indian Affairs was originally the Commission of State Indian Affairs created back in 1953. And they had a director first put in place in 1956. The purpose of the Division of Indian Affairs is we are the Indian Affairs Authority for the state of Utah. We serve as a liaison and promote positive intergovernmental relations with and between Utah Indian tribes. We also the governor, the federal government, and state agencies and local municipalities. We also coordinate with the governor's office to address Indian Affairs issues, develop policies. We work with the Native American Legislative Liaison Committee that's made up of representatives in the state legislature to address Indian Affairs issues and develop Indian legislation. And we also work closely with the Native American Remains Review Committee to determine the disposition of human remains found on state and school trust lands. What we also do is we try to help the eight federally recognized tribes in Utah by monitoring Utah and federal legislation, which impacts Utah Indian tribes and the state of Utah. We try our best to develop programs and services and provide alternatives and implement solutions that will allow Indian citizens an opportunity to share in the progress of the state of Utah. I think something that Governor Herbert let me know when I was appointed was that, it was his belief that strong and healthy Native communities contribute to a strong and healthy state. So we follow these elements and this call to provide just that.
And even as you describe all those purposes, you can see that there is a lot and a lot of complex issues that affect our tribal nations, whether it be the resources on the land or participation in the decisions about that land and their own homes and societies. You mentioned we have eight distinct tribal nations. Can you identify those for us?
Well, the eight federally recognized tribal nations in Utah are the Skull Valley Band of Goshute, the Confederate Tribes of the Goshute Reservation, the Northwestern Band of Shoshone, the Ute Tribe, the Paiute Indian Tribes of Utah, the San Juan Southern Paiute, the Navajo Nation, and the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe has a community called the White Mesa Community near Blanding.
And the state of Utah covers a broad geographical area. Are the tribal nations concentrated in one region more than another?
They're pretty spread out outside of the Wasatch Front. Like I said, the Mountain Ute community is located just outside Blanding. The Navajo Nation is in San Juan County. San Juan Southern Paiute, they're headquartered in Tuba City, Arizona, but they have traditional lands here in southern Utah. The Paiute Indian Tribes of Utah are located in Cedar City and probably in the surrounding 2 hours around Cedar City. the Ute Tribe is out towards Fort Duchesne and Vernal. The Northwestern Band, their traditional lands are pretty much from I-80 north into Idaho, but they're currently headquartered in Ogden, Utah. And the Confederate tribes of the Goshute Reservation, they're located at exactly 60 miles south of Wendover, Nevada, on the Utah. Well, their reservation goes into Utah and Nevada. And the Squaw Valley Band is just some south of Tooele.
Mm-hmm. So as we look at this, you know, I know that as my children attend schools, they begin to learn more and more about the tribal history of Utah and the sacred and ancestral lands that have been there. In your opinion, Dustin, how are we doing as a state, as a community, with being able to recognize and involve all of the 8 different tribes in the decision making as our state continues to grow and move forward?
Well, I think we're getting better. We can always get better no matter where we find ourselves. I think the Herbert administration and the Cox administration are doing everything they can to make sure that if state action is going to affect tribal governments in any way, they want to make sure that we're speaking with tribal governments. There's a consultation executive order that came out, and it directs all executive agencies to appoint a tribal liaison and to come up with a consultation process where they can correctly more efficiently communicate with tribes. And that's something our office helps with. So if UDOT is building a road, they have a liaison that's there that can contact tribes and say, hey, this is where we're planning on doing a road. We understand this is your traditional area. How can we make sure that we do this in a way that's not going to affect your tribe beliefs, your culture, or maybe your ancestral ground as you see it? And we're doing better. We're doing a lot better at that. And we can always do better. And so I think as far as when you brought up your kids in school learning more about tribes, I think we're doing better there too. We're trying to work with different organizations that want to develop curriculum that teachers can use to give a more accurate history of the tribes in Utah, but also make sure that they have the resources available so that teachers feel comfortable providing this information.
It's interesting, and I appreciate that. For those who've just joined us, that was Dustin Jansen. He's the director of the Division of Indian Affairs. It was interesting. I was fortunate enough to moderate a town hall meeting for the Utah Division of Multicultural Affairs at the beginning of the year. And we were talking about how during the COVID-19 pandemic, how important it was to reach liaisons in all the different communities, that in particular are communities that are in the minority, that they were receiving vital life-saving information in a way that could communicate directly with them and more efficiently and effectively. And that throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, they started to change the way that the language was presented. It started to try to involve more people, bring more representatives to that table to say, what information is needed? What are you hearing? How can we best help you? And they talked about improving that we come up with better solutions in the state, whether we're addressing a public health issue or any other community or societal issue, that we come up with a better solution when those who are involved or affected by our decisions and policies are involved in that conversation. So I was thinking that when you brought up the importance of having those liaisons communicating as different organizations and agencies interact with their lands.
Absolutely. I mean, this executive order for consultation and having these liaisons has been in place, I think, since 2014. But the pandemic really showed us how important that connection is. I mean, especially if you look at the Emergency Management Division or the Utah Department of Health, Indian health offices, they were able to connect directly with their tribal counterparts and tribal government, coordinate delivery of, like you said, vital PPE, testing equipment, and even worked with some tribes, worked together on getting vaccines delivered. We saw that during that powerful windstorm last year that knocked down tens of thousands of trees throughout Salt Lake, when they were just going to turn all that wood into chips and dispose of it, how organizations were able to communicate with state agencies, and these state agencies were able to communicate with tribes and get that wood delivered to tribal communities that need it, that may need that wood or use that wood during the winter months that follow. And the pandemic is a horrible thing, but I think one of the blessings of it is it really showed us how good communication and consultation can really save lives and help people.
And I appreciate that too. Communication and consultation. And you can't really have good communication without that consultation piece. So I agree with that and I appreciate so much. We also have on the line with us James Toledo. He is the program manager within Utah's Division of Indian Affairs. And I wanted to talk with you, James, a bit. Let's talk about the importance of sharing cultures from our tribes and sharing that not only within the different Indian populations and cultures, but outside of that as well. So talk to us a little bit about some of the goals of the different programs you've had throughout the year and what might be coming our way, James.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. I think you had kind of touched on it earlier in the conversation when you'd mentioned, you know, with your kids going to school, learning about the different tribes in Utah. So one of our initiatives is to kind of improve that education. I know we get contacted by, you know, teachers or other educators, usually in the month of November, with it being National Native American Heritage Month, you know, requesting a guest speaker or some type of program that highlights Native culture within the state of Utah. So to kind of address that request, you know, we host our annual Utah's Indigenous Day is what we've called our event. And this event is usually held in the month of November. And the purpose of the event is really to improve education about Utah's tribes. You know, not many people realize that we do have 8 tribes in the state of Utah. I think most people think we have 5 tribes. And so, you know, again, we just would like to highlight the 8 tribes and, you know, their contributions to the state. And so this year's event, just to kind of do a little shout out for us, is going to be held on Friday, November 12th. At the Utah Cultural Celebration Center in West Valley City. And so we're currently in the planning process of it, but we're planning to do a social powwow. And the reason why we wanted to kind of do a social powwow, so social powwow is just a gathering of Native people where they come together and really to dance and to network, to share stories, and really just to connect with one another. So it helps us strengthen our relations with with our family members and just other Native people in general. And so this is, you know, really a gathering to celebrate our Native traditions, to help strengthen our cultural ties. But we also wanted to take this opportunity to help, our non-Native citizens throughout the state who are interested in learning more about, the tribes in Utah or even just, Native American, traditions, or many people have heard of a powwow, maybe have never attended a powwow. And so this gives them an opportunity to kind of bring their family and to learn more about these traditions. And so so we're moving forward with trying to, planning a social powwow where we'll have some education involved, where we'll have, some of the dancers maybe talk about the different dances that they're dancing and kind of the origins of those dances, the significance, how they started, why they decided to, to dance. We'll have a live drum group. And so really it's going to be an evening of fun and just learning and mingling. We'll have some vendor areas as well, where we'll have some cultural vendors. So if people were wanting to get jewelry or things like that, we'll make those opportunities there. And also an opportunity for our supporters or people who've partnered with us with different organizations, an opportunity just to share more about programs that they're offering and, kind of just, again, community sharing of information.
So it's referred to, and I appreciate so much, James, this information, because to me it sounds like an extraordinary event. And I had mentioned, yes, children in schools are learning, and they're learning more about our state's tribal history, our country's tribal histories, but we just don't want it to be a section in school and then we move on. In my opinion, as we try to be a state that celebrates all within our communities, it is something that we'd want all of us adults to also be educated in and apprised in and support. supportive of. So the social powwow is one that anyone who's interested, whether or not they have Native American ancestry, is invited to attend. Is that right?
Absolutely. And so, yeah, so this event is open and will be free to the public. And again, really, the purpose of the event is to educate, you know, both our Native and non-Native, because there's even, you know, Native youth who live along the Wasatch Front who may have never lived on a reservation and, you know, may have minimal knowledge of their culture and their traditions. And so this is an opportunity to expose them to that, and also to our, you know, our non-Native neighbors, you know, to say, hey, you know, this is who we are. If you're interested in learning more about our traditions and, you know, wanting to, you know, explore that, you know, this is an event and an opportunity and a safe space to learn and educate themselves.
And will we have representatives of all 8 tribes at the social powwow, ideally?
Ideally, we would like to do that. Again, we're still in the planning stages, so, you know, we hope to have representation from all 8 tribes. We will have the flags for all 8 tribes there, and so they will be part of the program. But, you know, we will work to, you know, get representatives from each of the 8 tribes.
I wanted to follow up, and I can only draw on my own personal history as a daughter of a Mexican-American and indigenous ancestry. And my mother often talked about what it was like for her to straddle 2 cultures, you know, her own Mexican-Indian culture and her American culture, and about how, you know, just one skip of a generation, so much gets lost, whether it be cultural stories or language. And with that, there can be a sense of identity. Who am I? I wanted to ask you, James, and Dustin as well, but first, James, how important is it for youth and adults and children in particular to have that idea of knowing and respecting and being able to hold on to their Native traditions?
I think it's important, just in the sense that it's part of our identity. It gives us strength. It helps us, you know, navigate life. Life is always going to throw obstacles and challenges at us. And I believe when we have our youth have knowledge, even if it's a basic knowledge of who they are and where they come from, you know, that gives us all strength to continue to move forward. It, you know, helps us to be resilient as we move through life. And, Dustin, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, James. And you know, I think we have to just come to terms with the fact that there are a lot of Native people that are probably in the urban areas that don't get that opportunity. We got to look at our Native history also. You know, there were generations of Native people who were sent to boarding schools during the school year, and some stayed year-round. And when those traditional teachings and cultural lessons are being taught during the winter times, they weren't at home, right? They were in schools, sometimes hundreds and thousands of miles away from their reservations, from their traditional lands. And so when they came back, they missed a lot of that cultural teaching. They may not have had the opportunity to practice their language, right? And have that language evolve to include new inventions and new concepts. And then we expect these parents, these Native parents who have, you know, were told that they cannot speak their language, to teach their children their language, to teach their children the culture, when they themselves have, you know, been denied that, you know, by legal means, even, you know, where laws are passed to prohibit that instruction. And so, you know, we recognize that, and we're trying to provide opportunities for everyone to learn more and grow together. And I commend all the tribes in Utah, all 8 tribes that provide language instruction, that keep their cultures alive, that keep their spiritual beliefs alive, and pass those things on to younger generations. Because like James said, you know, if you don't understand where you come from, it's hard to understand who you are and what you can become. And so that traditional cultural education is so vital. And I think that this is something that the state and tribes can work together on to make sure that it continues to go forward.
Wow, that is really heartbreaking and important part of history to remember. I do know that my Native American great uncles were swept up in boarding schools and had to leave their family and go across the country as well. And we're still trying to parse together some of that family history that is missing. And so what time period did this occur? Was it the turn of the century, or about when did the U.S. government take Native American children away from their homes and send them off to schools and other places?
Well, for Native American children in here in the United States, the boarding school experience started and began in the early 1860s.
Wow!
And so they were sending kids from Arizona all the way to Pennsylvania to go to school thousands of miles away, by train, to prohibit them from running away, to prohibit parents from being close by, that where the government thought you're inhibiting your child's education and assimilation into American culture. And so these were drastic steps that were being taken, and it really put a wrench in the gears of learning culture and language.
And for those who've just joined us, this is Dustin Jansen. He's the director of the Division of Indian Affairs here in Utah. We're also joined by James Toledo, the program manager. We have about 5 minutes together. For those who come from tribal ancestry, if they would like more information about how to learn the native languages, the traditions, where is the best place for them to go to access that, Dustin?
I think if you know your culture and your tribal affiliation, the best place to go would be contacting your tribal government. It's really important to understand that tribes, although are an ethnic minority within the United States, they are also sovereign nations. And these sovereign nations have governments, and they have resources that will provide that information to you. I would encourage all those to start attending Native American events. Not only within the communities that you may be born into and involved in, but look for intertribal events, events where many tribes get together and celebrate with one another. Powwows are a great resource. If you look online, almost every tribe has a website up, and they have resources there to help you. But really, I think one of the easiest things to do is find Native people around you, talk to them, be a friend, and learn from one another. And I think that's one of the greatest things you can do. You can contact our office, by telephone, or you can find our website and look for the resources that we have available. And it's our job, to point you in the right direction and put you in contact with people that can help. James?
Yeah, no, I like how you mentioned. I would agree that the best way to learn more about your cultural traditions is, if you know your tribal affiliation, is to contact your tribal government, because they many tribes have language preservation programs and other educational opportunities available to learn more about their specific tribe and your cultural traditions.
And James, you also mentioned the social powwow that is coming up. Can you give us the date again and where we can find more information about that event and any other future events that the Utah Division of Indian Affairs is holding?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're planning our annual Utah's Indigenous Day event on Friday, November 12th. It will be at the Utah Cultural Celebration Center in West Valley City. And it'll be an evening event, so probably around from 5 to 9 o'clock. And so we'll be having a social powwow, again, just a gathering to celebrate our Native traditions and an effort to strengthen our cultural ties.
All right. I appreciate that so much. James Toledo, the program manager of the Utah Division of Indian Affairs, Dustin Jansen, the director of the division. Thank you for taking time to begin the conversation for us to understand more about the importance of the Utah Division of Indian Affairs, the importance of our tribal history, the importance of preserving culture and language and incorporating it more, not only in our schools, but in our lives and in our communities. Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Utah Weekly Forum.
Thank you for having us.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.